Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with My Opal, rewarding loyalty and taking care of members.
More than 100 million COVID vaccine doses are due to expire and be thrown away unless global leaders urgently share surplus supplies with the world's poorest countries. That's according to former British Prime Minister Gordon Brown, who has just been appointed the World Health Organization's Ambassador for Global Health Financing. And Mr. Brown joins me on the line now. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Claire.
Thank you very much for joining us this morning. Where are all of these vaccines due to expire in the next few months?
Across the whole of Europe and across America and in Canada, in the Western countries that over-ordered and are now overstocked for vaccines. And I think there's about 300 million ready to be transported somewhere else, but are lying in warehouses or on order for delivery at the moment. I think by next month it'll be 500 million, by the end of the year, a billion extra vaccines that will not be used in the West, even if we do boosters and even if we vaccinate the over 12s. So they ought to get to people who need them. Only 2% of Africa has been vaccinated, only 2% of low-income countries, whereas we're at around 70% fully vaccinated and of adults. And that means that we're putting lots of lives at risk by hoarding these vaccines.
And you say it's a failure of Boris Johnson, Joe Biden and EU leaders to agree on a plan. So the vaccines are there, the plan is not.
That's right. And they're meeting on Wednesday with a summit held under the presidency of Joe Biden. This is the time to agree a plan. It's no use just hoping that a few countries will be generous enough to give their extra vaccines. What I'm saying, if they don't give these vaccines over, they will be wasted, because 100 million vaccines will expire by December. In fact, if we don't get them airlifted out quickly enough and they lie for longer, then about 200 million vaccines will be wasted. That's the result of research by a very specialist group, Airfinity, which I know the manufacturers acknowledge as being significant research. And so we really have to act very quickly, otherwise vaccines are going to be wasted and lives are going to be lost.
I know that COVAX is something that our listeners will be familiar with. This is the plan to distribute the vaccines worldwide. It's a program backed by the World Health Organization. Is that not working then?
It's not working because not enough vaccines are being passed to it. So they want to order vaccines from the manufacturers. But Canada, America, Britain and Europe have got preferential contracts. What's happening is that COVAX has been denied the vaccines it wants because these surplus vaccines are going to Western countries. And it really is very simple. They ought to be released. The vaccines they have in the warehouses, the delivery contracts that are on offer should be switched to COVAX so that they can distribute to the rest of the world. At the moment, COVAX had wanted to distribute 2 billion vaccines by the end of the year. I think to the poorest countries, the figure is only over 100 million at the moment. And of course, we're now in the middle of September. So we really have to act quickly to get the vaccines. Health workers in Africa have not even been vaccinated. The vulnerable elderly have not been vaccinated. It's quite ridiculous that vaccines are available. It's a huge triumph of medical science to have the vaccines, and we can't get them to people who need it. It's a vaccine-rich world as against a vaccine-poor world, and this is morally indefensible. Mm-hmm.
But as concerns grow around immunity waning, particularly those who were vaccinated earlier on in the process, say in January, the trick is to convince world leaders and populations that no one is safe until everyone is safe.
That's right. But remember, my figures are very cautious because I'm assuming that a decision is made in most countries to do boosters in the West. And I'm assuming also that the over 12s will be vaccinated. So even when we assume that these vaccines are needed in the West, there is still a surplus. And the reason there is a surplus is we're producing vaccines now at the rate of 1.5 billion a month. It will soon be 2 billion by January. Where even in April, it was only half a billion a month. So we've managed to expand the production. The supply is there. I think there's about 92 separate factories making the vaccines around the world, but we're not getting the vaccines to the people who need them. So the supply problem is being solved, but the inequitable distribution is causing thousands of lives to be lost. You must look at some of the figures, because in Britain, we're estimating now that 100,000 lives have been saved as a result of vaccinating people. So if you can save 100,000 lives with less than 100 million vaccines, then you're in a position to save tens of thousands of lives more, indeed hundreds of thousands of lives more in Africa and elsewhere if we can get these hundreds of millions of vaccines to them now that they're available.
It's interesting that you say that the production side of things is sorted, because when vaccines first came on stream, we heard a lot of, pharma companies should share their patents for vaccines so that more companies can produce them. Are you saying that that's not at issue now?
No, I think it's an issue for the longer term, that you've got to have manufacturing capacity in Africa. Well, look at what Africa's now saying to us. They're saying, look, you've got all the production facilities in the West and you're not giving us the vaccines. So they have got to build up the manufacturing capacity so they're not at the bottom of the queue, the last to be getting the vaccines when they're in greatest need at the moment, because the disease is spreading very fast there. So, yes, let's have the transfer of patents and technology and get the licensing agreements in place so that in future Africa has the manufacturing capacity and so do low-income countries. But in the short term, there is a solution to get people vaccinated before you build factories, and that's to get the surplus vaccines into the hands of Africa and the low-income countries as quickly as possible. I would be organising airlifts of these extra vaccines at the moment instead of allowing them to go to waste in warehouses or to be returned to the centre of a governmental machine in one country when they should be being transferred to another country.
Are you detecting any political will to move on this?
Yes, I think people now understand that when the G7 met in June in Cornwall, and to be honest, I was pressing them then for this plan, that they made a terrible mistake that left the world unprotected. They were unambitious. They didn't agree a plan. They just asked for people to volunteer doses. And they have only sent about 100 million doses since then, despite a promise that there would be about a billion doses sent over a few months. Now, they have got this summit on Wednesday. They should agree immediately that there's 300 billion vaccines this month that should be transferred. They should get them airlifted if necessary, and that's from Europe and America. Then they should agree that the 500 million that will have been available by next month, that's an extra 200 million, will get to the countries in need, and by Christmas, a billion. Now, if they don't do that, as I warn, from all the evidence we've got to bear, that 100 million vaccines could simply be wasted, and that's tens of thousands of lives that are put at risk. Mm-hmm.
And that's with countries in the West vaccinating their over 12s, boosting those who need to have a booster shot. You're still saying with all of that happening, this wastage will occur?
Yeah, Claire, I mean, obviously there can be a debate about how you stage the vaccination of boosters and everything else, but we are calculating the figures that we've got, that all the countries in Europe will decide to do boosters, and that they will decide to vaccinate the over 12s. And so we're making that assumption. So if that was not done, there'd be more vaccines available. But it's not for me to second guess the policies of individual countries. But what I can say is that even with these things happening, there are enough vaccines now to get the targets that Africa and the low-income countries have met this month, next month, and the month after. And then by May next year, there will be we should be able to have vaccinated the whole world. Now, the Biden summit will probably agree to do something by next September to vaccinate 70% of the world. I actually believe it could happen quicker. And I've just got to emphasize the point to your listeners that it's in everybody's interest that this happens, because if the disease spreads in Africa, if Africa becomes the center for COVID, as is quite likely, then we will have new mutations, new variants. They will come back to haunt us, not just in Africa, but in countries where people are fully vaccinated, because that vaccine may be no protection against the new mutations that are likely to happen. So to allow this disease to spread uninhibited in the poorest countries of the world and to leave people unprotected against it is really a crime against humanity, and it cannot be allowed to continue.
Okay, just briefly before I let you go, you were speaking during the summer at an event where you said you won't give up personally, you won't give up pushing for the UK to rejoin the EU. Do you think that that's likely at any stage?
Well, even if it's not likely in the immediate terms, I think there are voices in Britain that have got to remain consistent with what they've always believed, that Britain's future is European and that we benefit from the contacts we have with the Republic of Ireland, but with all European Union countries. And I believe that British public opinion will come to the view over the next few years that they do want a relationship with the European Union. And I will continue to press for that, even if at the moment it seems as if that's not likely to happen in the short term.
How do you rate the impact of Brexit on the UK so far?
Well, I think Brexit is now proven to be damaging our trade. Obviously, with COVID, it's sometimes difficult to separate what have been the factors that are making a difference. But I also see the dangers in lost cooperation, in our inability to work with each other closely. We're seeing more recently this fight over defence policy between Britain, America, Australia and France. These outbursts between allies should not be happening, and we really need to build up stronger relationships in the future.
And Nicola Sturgeon again raising the prospect of another independence referendum. Scotland could, of course, go it alone here if that were to happen, and perhaps rejoin the European Union down the line alone.
Well, Claire, I think you've got to ask the other countries of the European Union, particularly Spain, about what they feel about admitting Scotland to membership of the European Union. So I don't think that's something that you could take for granted at any point. But the important thing is that I want Britain, the whole of Britain, not just part of it, to be part of Europe and to be part of the European Union. We did succeed in getting Britain to stay in the Horizon, the science project. We didn't succeed in getting Britain to stay in Erasmus, the schools and university and college training project. I know the Republic of Ireland is helping Northern Ireland students stay part of Erasmus. But you see, we will find over the next few years that there's a desire for contact and cooperation, not just between Britain and Europe, but I think, despite what the Scottish National Party say, between all different parts of the United Kingdom, I think people want them to cooperate and want them to work together. And I think the them and us approach, or them against us approach of the nationalists in Scotland, is not really something that, when you look at the need for an independent world to cooperate on climate change and on the economy and on global health issues and on pandemics, it's cooperation that is the way of the future.
Gordon Brown, thank you very much for talking to us this morning.